Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Casting Lots, Creating a Family in a Beautiful Broken World by Susan Silverman. Read by Exie Sands. Prologue. My whole life, I felt like God's bitch, begging, negotiating, bargaining for the safety of my loved ones, particularly my mother. I offered random promises. What else did I have to give? Cut my long braids? Sacrifice Karen Marie, the doll I shared my bed with, despite her large, hard plastic shape, lest she feel unloved? Shun the Brady Bunch and the Partridge Family on Friday nights? Like how I'd be vigilant, agree to watch over them, never leave under my own steam for parties or school, and never ever allow myself to get dragooned into a sleepaway camp. I'd hold my breath a full minute, or at recess I'd purposely get an out in kickball in exchange for my parents still being alive when the 3 p.m. bell rang and the school day was over. It seemed to work. My parents were alive. Although dead, they may have had a happier marriage. But it was little use trying to banish the fears. Vivid images of car crashes and burglaries had awaited my family in my absence. It's possible Mom is dead right now. The principal's secretary brings a note from my teacher. I analyze her face. Is she stealing a glance at me? Is that smile a ruse hiding the news she bears? I have already figured out that the police who were called to the scene of my mother's death had determined that her daughter, the poor child, still innocently unaware of the tragedy that has befallen her, was sitting in the third row, second seat back at Webster School on Elm Street, and soon I would be across from Principal McMahon at his big desk, and he would be looking at his hands, afraid to tell me. Is that faraway sound a siren? The light in the distance an ambulance? I should never have left. Okay, God, if I run nonstop until I get home, will you keep them safe? I never stepped on a crack while on my way to the local market, clutching dimes for Sky Bars, Reese's Cups, and Malamars. I suspected that where I stepped had no impact on my mother's fate, but I couldn't chance it. Constantly fighting any separation from my mother was a kind of exile, an estrangement of my mind that yearned for rationality, from my heart that knew the world was irrational and that at any second the big guy could flick me a booger and whomp, my mother would be gone. I had to keep him conscious and protective of us. I had to lobby him. I had to keep him happy. By the fourth grade, completing the 5-minute walk to school in our quiet, suburb-like North Manchester neighborhood was nearly impossible. "Will you be home when I get back?" I called out repeatedly to my mother as I inched down the cement walkway. "Yes," she said with a wave of the hand that was less a bye-bye and more of a fingers-flicking shoe motion. "Promise? I promise. Swear? I swear. But, Mom, how can you be sure nothing will happen to you?" I must have been impossible to raise. If I were my mother, I'd be negotiating with God for me not to come home. My 6-year-old sister Laura would watch me with her bright green almond eyes, waiting for my every hesitant step, and decide I was hopeless. She'd head to her first grade class on her own, her golden curls bobbing, while I doubled back, creeping around the side of the house and pressing my nose to the sliding glass door, hands cupped around my eyes, peering in at my mother as she made apple slices for Sarah, who smiled happily in her high chair. Oh, to sit and watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and Captain Kangaroo with Sarah, eating crackers and cheese my mom would arrange in a wooden bowl laced with an open napkin. My mother would notice me and unlock the door. Now the world felt right. God was back in his cage, and I could relax. My mother looked like Marlo Thomas in That Girl, when she wore her flared brown pants with patterns of giant orange and white leaves, a pale silk top, big silver hoop earrings, and an expertly attached fall with a flip at the ends, she confirmed my overall sense that I was living in the same house with a famous actress. I knew I would stay up half the night to make sure she and my father came home safely from their night out, that there had been no fire in the movie theater or smash-up on the road home. I'd distract myself watching Wolfman Jack and Vampira, and, if I was lucky, a late-night appearance of Green Acres or Family Affair, hoping my parents would return before the star-spangled banner introduced Static, and I would be left utterly alone. The shape of my life formed itself around ragged fears of death. It demanded vigilance. "Honey, everything is fine," my mother whispered as she tried to lull me to sleep. "Just lie down and think sweet thoughts." I knew better. Inattention for even a moment had dire consequences. God knows it had happened before. If Zoloft had existed when I was in college, would I still have married Yosef? From the start, I nestled, trembling, into his sense of well-being, embracing his religious practice, activism, and purpose.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?